that series. We're talking about contending just in creation evolution. I ask our older kids to come on in here from class because they hear that all day in school, just like I did all my life and most of you. How many of you grew up on in evolution schools being taught to you? It's interesting. My wife, my wife's very smart and was who's who and everything, and she took all the advanced classes. And she said in all of her years in public school, all of her evolution, all of her teachers in science, all of them would teach evolution because they had to, but all of them would be smirking and rolling their eyes all the time, except for one. So she had one who really believed it. The rest of them were kind of, okay, we're teaching this, but, you know, like all this happened by accident type thing. And I remember talking to my science teacher and here and there, but I was taught that my whole life. These kids are taught that, of course, and public school and stuff, so they get to hear that. And anything you hear enough, you believe. Everybody thinks they're an independent thinker and everything like that, but they all mimic what they've been taught their whole life. If they were brought up in America, they'll say, I'm an independent thinker and I believe in freedom. I believe that women and minorities should have rights and everybody should be able to vote and do all kinds of things, which is all good and true. But that's not what they say if they grew up in Afghanistan. Everybody there says women shouldn't have an education and so on and so forth. Until recently, they got a little more point of view. We get to hear the point of view of evolution all the time. Discovery Channel, on TV, anytime we want to watch some documentary about science, we get to watch it. If we grew up in public schools, go to college, wherever we go. Many of you are going to college, have gone to college. So we hear both sides. And I find that when we hear creation, it obviously stands out. Romans 1 teaches us one of those reasons. Verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. For God has showed it unto them. God shows and puts inside of you the knowledge of him, and he manifests the knowledge of him to you. 4, verse 20, how does he do that? For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they were without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into the image made like corruptible man. And so they know of God. The knowledge of God is built in. Remember, no child in the world ever grows up not believing in God. Every culture, doesn't matter, middle of the city, middle of the jungle, doesn't matter where they are, they will believe in God until someone tells them there is no God, because it's logical. I find that because of this verse, God declares himself in nature, is how he says you can know who he is. You find very few atheists in outside of town. Because they see God's creation. I do find the majority of atheists are way buried in the middle of an inner city. Because all day long they see what mankind has made, and they just assume, they just start thinking secular thoughts. They don't see nature. They don't see stars. They don't see the amazingness of nature. All they see is traffic and everything else. And so you'll find very few atheists outside of town, and you'll find very few atheists, by the way. There's not a lot of atheists. Atheists are a small percentage of even our population. But you don't find a lot of even inside town, but you'll find the vast majority of them are inside towns, almost always universities, because that's they glorify education and learn that same thing over and over. They hear the same thing over and over. Same reason somebody's a racist, because they hear the same thing over and over. Same reason anything you hear the same thing over and over, no matter how kooky it is, you think it sounds logical. So that's the case. And then again in Psalms 19... And then I want to get into some things here about the second way we see God's God in creation, and just in science we see that, and we're seeing it more and more. The great thing is, I heard a preacher recently say, he says, you know, the more science is getting advanced, and the more the devil is fighting, the more God has set it up so that they're going to discover things about him in the incredible science they're finding. And the more advanced they get, the more they're finding things. Psalms 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day into day are their speech, and night into night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. And so we see that there's an order in the universe. Everything works perfectly. The planet goes around in a circle. The seasons change. The sun rises in the east, sets in the west every single day. The moon goes around the earth. The way that we go around the sun is perfect in the way it changes seasons. Technically, as Ken was talking about, the earth doesn't tilt, but the way it goes around the sun, and it does in the sense where we keep on changing season. The moon controls the tides. That is amazing. And, of course, we talked about that last week. We won't get into that. But everything works perfectly. Even if they looked at all the science, and here's a neat thing. They look at science, and scientists study this stuff, and we're not against that. We like them to discover this stuff. It teaches what God did. So they study the laws and what actually happened and why these things do that. And they say, well, we know why it does that. It's because of this law. And they're right. Theory of relativity, fine. All these different things are fine. It's just when you discover it, you find out how God designed it. Because for all those laws to work together and everything to work perfectly by accident, by a big explosion, is ridiculous. And you're discovering what God made and the laws he made. Hey, we know how the nervous system works. But the fact you're going to say that there is a spinal cord evolved and all your nerves send down through your brain, down your spinal cord to tip your fingers and does all that and works together and you can do all this stuff, that'll have my randomness. No, we know how this nervous system works. We know the science of it. We just say that wasn't happening by accident. And we can say, wow, God is amazing that he can design that. And that's what we do. And the next thing I want to study, we talked about the universe, but I want to study the order and complexity of life. The order and complexity of life, life itself, and just specifically the things we're discovering about about cells, the human body, life itself, how complex. You know, if you just stop for a second, say, I've got involuntary muscular responses, my heart is beating and my lungs are breathing, and I have nothing to do with that. Just that is a miracle. If you just look at that, there's so many things in the body that you look at and so many things that just, it all happened by an explosion or by accident and came out of a rock and evolved. It's just so ridiculous to think that. And one of the things we've done and one of the things that's really helped with creation and defending creation in the scientific realm, and by the way, the Bible is always the best way to defend it, and you always use the word, but one of the great things is once we've gotten down to cellular level, it is saying God, it's got God stamped all over it. It's got a designer stamped everywhere on it. It is amazing. And if you just logically follow the process of thinking when you look at these things, you see a God. Let me just read you a quote. It's really, really humorous, actually. This is a couple quotes here. And by the way, look, the more they get into cell design, the more they're saying, my soul, look at this. And we'll read some quotes on this. But it says, biologist Richard Dawkins, which is the biggest anti-God and laughing at creation guy in the world, loves to make fun of it and loves to do that stuff. It says, even the well-known evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins, an outspoken atheist, acknowledges that, quote, biology is a study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Well, maybe you should come to that conclusion. And then Francis Crick, who shared the Nobel Prize in discovering the structure of DNA, cautioned. Now, this is hilarious. Listen to this. Quote, biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was not designed but rather evolved. Isn't that a funny quote? Now, when you look at this, it's obviously going to say this is design. But you got to constantly keep in mind this was not designed. It actually evolved. Now, you can push yourself and say, no, I'm not going to think that way. No, I can't. I know what it looks like. No, it doesn't. I know it looks like that. I know the butler standing there with the bloody knife in his hand over the body, you know, and saying he did it. But he couldn't have done it. It must have been somebody else. Here is creation is screaming in the cell designs, and the biologist says, you know what, we've got to keep in mind when we look at this, I know it looks designed. I know it looks like there's something that designed this. We cannot think that way, though. We have to think that it evolved. We got to keep that in mind constantly. We got to keep going back to the right way of thinking. In other words, don't follow your logic. Remember last week, you land on an island, you see a rock, Could have been there, could have been anything, could have been there forever. You see an arrowhead. Logic, just the eye test, looks and says, something made that. You go and you find a watch in the ground, you say, wow, that's really amazing. That really was designed. And then you look at the human body and you say, huh, something designed that. You look and it's just an obvious thing, as you said before. Let me read you a man who was just an atheist forever, for over 50 years, debating creationists, arguing with them forever and ever. But he was an honest man and eventually started to look at the cell and came to a conclusion. His name is Anthony Flew. And let me just read you some stuff about him. And I think this is what is beginning to happen, fortunately, is some people are starting to look and see the obvious in creation. And this, and the universe didn't do it for them, but the cell's complexity is starting to do it for people. And DNA is starting to do it for people. Surely one of the most significant events in the long history of creation-evolution debate has been the about-face in recent years by leading British philosopher professor Anthony Flew, who for more than half a century was one of the most outspoken atheists, the world's most outspoken atheists. Until a few years ago, he had been writing books and debating prominent religious believers for more than five decades, beginning with his joust with celebrated author and Christian apologist C.S. Lewis. Some of his debates attracted crowds of thousands. But at last, in 2004, at New York University, with Israeli scientist Gerald Schroeder and Scottish philosopher John Hadean, he announced, to the surprise of all concerned, that he now accepted the existence of a God. Although he says he is now a deist, and he hasn't yet embraced any particular religion, he is most impressed with the evidence for Christianity. And so he's not even saying, I'm a Bible-believing Christian now. He just says, okay, we can see now this stuff. So why has he changed his mind? The amazing reason, he says, is a recent scientific work on the origin of life, which he believes point to the activity of a creative intelligence. As he explained in the 2004 symposium in which he announced his new beliefs to the world, that changed his heart was almost entirely because of the DNA investigations. What I think the DNA material has done is that it is shown by the almost unbelievable complexity of the arrangements which are needed to produce life, that intelligence must have been involved in getting these extraordinary diverse elements to work together. It's the enormous complexity and the number of elements and the enormous subtlety of the ways they worked together. The meaning of these two parts at the right time by chance is simply minute. It is all a manner of the enormous complexity by which the results were achieved, into which we look. It looks like the work of intelligence. Flew said he's particularly impressed with scientist Gary Schroeder's point-by-point refutation of what he calls the monkey theorem. The monkey theory is this. They say, well, yes, it is incredible that all these cells came together, and yes, it's incredible that they had the exact right code in order to hold life together and actually be alive, and that it had in the code to reproduce itself. It is incredible that all those molecules and all those things came together. But if you left enough monkeys with enough typewriters for long enough, eventually they'd come out with Shakespeare, which is ridiculous. And Schroeder first referred to the experiment conducted by the British National Council of Arts. What they did is they said, let's see how many words these monkeys come up with if we leave them with a bunch of typewriters. And they actually did a test because scientists have too much time on their hands. A computer is placed in a cage with six monkeys. After 1 month of hammering away at it, as well as using it for a bathroom, the monkeys produced 50 type pages, but not a single word. Schroeder noted that it was the case, even though the shortest word in the English language is one letter, A or I. A is the only word where there is a space on either side of it. If we take it at the keyboard, that the keyboard has 30 characters, 26 letters and other symbols, then the likelihood of getting a one-word letter is 30 times 30 times 30, which is 27,000. The likelihood of getting a one-letter word is one chance in 27,000. So they suddenly let the monkeys do away for a month, and they didn't come up with even the word A by all the randomness of typing in the things. Let alone, they didn't have to come up with one word. They said, we'd come up with Shakespeare. It ain't going to happen. You're not going to get one word wrong, right? In the whole Shakespeare play, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art? That's going to come out of that with monkeys just sitting typing. And not just that, the whole play. That was the evolutionist defense, is if you just put enough monkeys for long enough and with typewriters, they'd eventually come with Shakespeare. And they wouldn't. Schroeder then applied the probabilities of the sonnet analogy. What chance of getting a Shakespearean sonnet, he asked. He continued, all the sonnets are the same length. They are, by definition, 14 lines long. I picked the one anew with the opening line, for shall I compare thee to a summer's day? I counted the number of letters. There are 488 letters in the sonnet. What's the likelihood of hammering away and getting 488 letters in the exact sequence as shall I compare thee to a summer's day? What you end up with is 26 multiplied by itself 488 times, or 26 to the 488th power. In other words, the base of 10 to the 690th. Now, the particles of the universe, not the grains of sand, I'm talking about protons, electrons, and neutrons, is 10 to the 80th. So all the particles in the entire universe are 10 to the 80th. The odds of coming up with this sonnet by the typewriter are 10 to the 690th. Okay, one in that. And if you took the entire universe and converted it into computer chips, forget the monkeys, each one weighing a millionth of a gram, and had each computer chip able to spin out 488 trials at, say, a million times a second, if you could turn the entire universe into these microcomputer chips, and these chips were spinning a million times a second, producing random letters and numbers or trials, you would get, since the beginning of time, would be 10 to the 90th trials. If you would be off again by the factor of 10 to the 600th, you would never get a sonnet by chance, even if computer chips are constantly, since the beginning of time, trying to get a sonnet by random chance. Yet they say these things came together all by chance with a genetic code to make life. Did you follow that? In other words, no. It didn't happen that way. And after hearing Schroeder's presentation, it told me I had very satisfactorily and decisively established that the monkey theorem was a load of rubbish, quote, this is Anthony Flew, and that it was particularly good at it, good way to do it as the sonnet. And so he goes on and on. And just one more quote. I believe that the universe was brought into existence by an infinite intelligence, and that the universe, this is Flew again, intricate laws manifest that scientists have called the mind of God. I believe that life and reproductive, that life and reproduction originate in a divine source. Why do I believe this? Given that I expounded and defended atheism for more than a half a century, its short answer is this. This is the word picture that as I see it, that has emerged from modern science. Science spotlights three dimensions of nature that point to God. That's exactly what Romans 1 says. Not a Christian, though, but just, it's obvious. First, there's the fact that nature obeys laws. The second is the dimension of life, the intelligently organized and purpose-driven beings which arose from matter. The third is the very existence of nature. But it is not science alone that has guided me. I've also been helped by renewed study of classical philosophical arguments. So, you can just see that. People see that, the things of the God has created. And we see that. How many genomes, if to get life, the minimum number of genomes for the most simple, self-sufficient life, independent life, the most simple creature in the world, how many genomes have to be there in that? The minimum number, they think, is 1,354. That's the simplest form of life. That's not a dog, that's not a spider. That's the simplest microbial life, they think. You have to have 1,354 genomes just to be alive, and how complicated that is. What do we see in the complexity of life? Number one, it's way too complex to be by accident. See, eventually what happens, got our new microphone here. Eventually what happens is when you get to debate, or you listen to the evolutionists, is everything goes back to one argument. Because you say this doesn't look likely, this doesn't seem like it happened, and what they always say is one argument, time. Given enough time, the monkeys would come up with Shakespeare. Given enough time, matter would come together. Given enough time, the life would evolve. Given enough time, you'd go from a microbe to a human. Given enough time, it would happen. It just got to be time. Is that what's happening? No, but given enough time, it would. Is that what the fossil record says? No, but given enough time, it would happen. That's the only argument. It eventually just says, well, I know the odds and everything scientifically is against it, but you just give it enough time. That's the argument. You know, but time, I don't think is a very good argument. And secondly, really, if you just think about it, just in the cellular level, it's not a legitimate argument that eventually they would come to simple life would even come together. The monkeys would never come Shakespeare, would never write Shakespeare. They say, well, if you just took apart a watch, you took apart an old watch that had all the gears and all the hands on it, and you took it apart and put it in a bag and you shook it enough, it would eventually come together, just like all the particles would come together and make life. Wait a minute. You're saying if you took all the gears and all the little screws out of the back of the watch, and every little gear that hooks every little gear, and the screw that screws them in together, and the fat hand on the inside, then the skin longer hand, then the second hand, and you put those all in a bag, and all the four screws that hold the back cover on, and every little part of the watch, and the little pins that hold the watch band on, and you just shook that together, you think eventually that watch would come back together. Those screws would screw in, and the gears would go together, and the back cover would come on. It would never happen. Give it as many years as you want, as many shakers as you want. Those screws aren't tightening in the right order. You know how hard it is to get one of those screws in the hole when you're trying to do it? and it just wouldn't happen. The time is not a good argument. It would never happen. It's interesting. We look at things, and let me just show you a picture here. As we're getting down to more and more looking at things, the complexity, we're finding out that actually inside your body, inside of the cells, we're finding out that there's actually little motors and little gadgets in the cellular level that are amazing. That here's a funny thing, that we are starting to copy the copy of those things that are made with our modern science. We're finally getting to that level of where we're starting to copy the cellular level. I'm going to show you. See, what Flew said, and what, not in this what I was reading today, but what he said another time, he said, you know what? He said, when I thought that life was just a blob of matter, he says, no big deal. When I understand DNA was a digital code and that there was incredible complexities, and as we get the electron microscopes looking close, we start seeing amazing things. That's what we're seeing now. We're seeing amazing things at the molecular level, and it doesn't just look like a blob. Like, let me just show you this, and I'll try to get close enough to show it to you. This is called a bacterial flagellum, and here we go. This is, if you have bacteria here, they got little tails that come out of it. See the little tails on there? Those are their paddles that paddle. They're their propellers that move them around. Okay, this is the up close of that thing. Now I know a decent amount about mechanical things about cars. There's a whole bunch of car parts on this little guy. We're looking, not on the bacteria, but we're looking on its propeller that makes this guy twist. And you look right there. Thank you. You look right there, and that's the close-up of that little end of the thing where it hooks into the bacteria. It has got the protein export system, the C-ring that surrounds it there, the motor complex around it, the inner membrane, the rod, which is basically a drive line in the car, the P-ring, the L-ring, the hook, which is actually a universal joint. It's got all these different things. It's literally spinning inside of itself with buffers around it, and it's twirling around in a circle and propelling this little critter. Critter is not the scientific term. You can look at that, and you say, come here, Mark, for a sec. You look at that, and you say, that just happened because atoms were just mutating around and coming together. Go walk to the back and let them take a look at that. Just kind of point it both ways. Are you saying that? Now, wait a minute. We look at this microphone, and we say, oh, that didn't happen by accident. We look at my watch. My watch is not that complicated. We look at the pulpit here, and we say, that didn't happen by accident. And yet that is so much more complicated than that. We wouldn't look at a car drivetrain. We wouldn't say, huh, look at that. That drivetrain just evolved. No, we'd say that was design. And yet we're looking down at the molecular level and just saying, look at that. You got a motor being driven in circles and propelling this thing. It's all with bearings, and it's got a drive line and a U-joint that shifts and adjusts. It is amazing, as we're getting to the molecular level, what we're seeing there. You know, and what they're also finding, and what a lot of very smart scientists are saying, is this. The process of making that thing, if it went through the process of evolution, the creature would have died. Because the motor won't work with one part there and another part happening. It's got to all be there at once. I think of the guy who, there was a guy who was a, who taught evolutionary biology about teeth at university, and the guy became, he had his students challenge him and said, hey, let me challenge you about evolution. He says, there's no reason, evolution's obvious. He was in his, I think, 50s. And they said, well, let me just ask you some questions. And his world is rocked, and he makes videos about creatures that defy evolution and how many creatures could not have evolved because it would have died in the process. Let me explain this way. Human digestive system, that amazing accident that happened. You have teeth all in your mouth, and different kinds of teeth for doing different types of things. You know, some eat an apple and some chew meat and do different things, and then you start chewing it, and your tongue is doing a bunch of things while you're chewing it. You bit your tongue, and it's, even your cheeks are doing part of the process, and all your mouth is doing that naturally. Once it's chewed down enough, your body knows to swallow it, and that amazing system that makes it swallow it, and then it goes down a tube into your stomach. Your stomach begins to churn it. And by the way, there's acid inside your body that isn't eating away your body, and it is sitting there, just having to be acid in your stomach by accident that makes the food break down. Then your stomach churns it and churns it and churns it, and it pushes it out the top of your stomach and goes in your intestines, and you got a large intestine and a small intestine. It goes to those things, and it just so happens those intestines happen to take out the nutritious stuff in it. After it goes to the intestines, it goes down and goes down into your colon or your bladder and is released perfectly. All those things just working perfectly together. Wait a minute. What do we do while, what happens during the process when you don't have a colon, when you're evolving? What happens when the intestines have not evolved enough to take out the nutrition? What about when there's no throat? What about, see, in other words, a bunch of these mechanical things in nature, and that's just on the whole body picture, in other words, the mechanical things in nature, they know that this mechanical thing, if you didn't have it all together at once, none of it would have worked. The process of it happening would have killed the creature. It wouldn't have been able to live at that time. And so that's one thing. Number two, too complex to happen by accident. Two, adaptations make sense. Here's where we're finding out in creation. Adaptations make sense. See, they used to say, well, look, take Darwin. He went out there and he found out, oh, there's the finch, and some got longer beaks, and some got these characteristics. And he says, these ones must have evolved and changed over time. He did not know about DNA. It's written in the DNA code. Now we understand that the adaptations that happen make perfect sense because it's written in the code to do that. We never see anything outside of anything's DNA code. We don't see the DNA code changing except for to the negative. So we see a bunny who's in the realm of snow, where there's lots of snow, and they'll say, you know what, look, the bunny evolved to be white. No, it's written in its DNA code that it can be white. It's all in the code. It's a computer code written that says, you can be this way, and if you need to adapt, you can do this. You can get a longer beak. You can have a Chihuahua, or you can have a Great Dane. It's a dog. I watched a debate one time. It was so funny because the creationist, he just at the start of the debate, he said, now, I'm going to tell you what he's going to do. He's going to go and talk about little microevolution. He's going to say, well, we had a finch got a longer beak, and a dog became much bigger, and a bunny got white fur. And he says, now, in every situation, you will never have changed species or changed anything about the species, and everything he's going to say is written in the DNA code, and he's going to deduce from that that means that evolution is true. Now, he told him that ahead of time, and sure enough, this guy says, we did this experiment, and we messed up with the genetics of a moth, and that moth was white when it was done. And what was it when it was done? It was a white moth. It was white. A white what? A moth. So it was still a moth. Yeah. And these bunnies, they become white if they're in the snow. Those what? Bunnies? Oh, they're still bunnies. Okay. Did the bunny become a saber-toothed tiger? Did the bunny become a spider? Did the bunny become a dog or a kitty? Oh, it was still a bunny. And everyone, even in the crowd, even the evolutionists had to laugh because everybody did the same thing. You know what? These things adapted. This bird got a little longer beak. Is that in the DNA code of that bird? Yes. Okay, so it followed its DNA code, and it didn't change species. Same thing. See, adaptations that we see in nature, which are true. You put a certain animal in a certain thing. You put a human in a certain thing. Their skin color will become darker to deal with the sun they're going to get. There all kinds of things will happen with humans. They will adapt. Humans can do different things. You put people in different situations. They adapt. You put certain animals in certain situations. They become stronger. But it's all written in the code, and the weaker of them die away. And so that the ones that, whose DNA is written a certain way, they become stronger and more fit. Because the weak ones can't survive. Chihuahuas don't make it in the Arctic. Okay, you have big, strong dogs. And you have that. So you see that. It's all written in the DNA code. And so it's all in there. And that's all true. It even explains, by the way, it even explains where Cain got his wife. And why that makes sense. Now that we understand DNA. Let's go back to Genesis. Where did Cain get his wife? From his mother-in-law. But besides that, in Genesis chapter 5, see, they say, well, there's Cain and Abel, but understand, Adam and Eve had a whole bunch of girls, too. It just doesn't mention their names. Genesis chapter 5, verse 4, it says, in the days of Adam, after he had begotten Seth, were 800 years, and he begat sons and daughters. Well, wait a minute, how can they be married if they're brother and sister? Understand, if the Bible point of view is right, Adam started with perfect DNA. And everything is deteriorating. Our DNA, by the way, that's what's happened with DNA. Our DNA is deteriorating, and humankind's DNA is deteriorating. And as you live, your DNA deteriorates. You don't look at an 80-year-old man and says, look, that 80-year-old man is becoming so complex and so much better. That's not what's happening. Everything's deteriorating. We believe Adam had perfect DNA until he sinned, and God said, boom, now you got in your genes to die. But humans at that time lived 600, 700, 800 years. Because they had way better DNA. See, we believe everything started off perfection and is deteriorating. That's our belief, and that's what's happening in the universe. And we believe at the start, their DNA was so close to perfect that the problems with marrying your brother and sister that happen nowadays wouldn't be a big problem because they had nearly perfect DNA. And it's the faults in the DNA that do not, if the husband has some faults and the wife has the same faults, more than likely they're going to have a child with mutated DNA, with major DNA problems. But if they had near-perfect DNA, it would not be a problem. And then as they scattered and became more and more humans, and they started living less time, the DNA was worse and worse, which fits in perfectly with the Bible point of view, we see where he would have gotten his wife. That makes sense. We see mutations, and we've covered this a little bit, but mutations will not help. Now that we see DNA and understand DNA and the complexity of life and God's design, we see mutations aren't going to help people. DNA is so much like a computer code, and you've got these four different letters, and you got this pattern that twirls around in the double helix, and it's so complicated and so amazing, and it's this incredible digital code that he talked about, we just read about there. When I used to work at the trucking company, we used to ship. I think it was Dell. It was either Dell or Hewlett Packard, one of the big computer companies. And we used to ship their computers. And they're a great freight. They're all palletized and pallets real easy. And we also used to ship, and I don't even know what they're for, we used to ship huge magnets. They were, I'd say, 4 feet by 4 feet wide. And the awesome thing about it was these 4 feet by 4 feet wide magnets, first of all, they cleaned all the metal shavings out of your trailer, which is cool. But second thing they did was they were great for stacking things on because the magnets didn't break. And they were only about this tall. And those computer pallets were about this tall. And you know what was awesome? The perfect fit was to stack those computer pallets on top of those magnet pallets because they just fit right up the ceiling. The trailer was full. Everything was great. And what did we know? We're just dumb dock hands. And a whole bunch of dock hands all over the nation, they would get these big shipments of computers and big shipments of magnets together with Windows on the computers. And, you know, lo and behold, the code, the digital code in those computers, when it got mutated by those magnets, it did not make an advanced computer program. Yes, we mutated. And you know what? When we mutated that digital code, just like DNA, that Windows program that, you know, Bill Gates should have, if it would have only mutated to something better, think of the money Bill Gates would have paid us for mutating his digital program. Because when you, if you left your computer alone, your computer programs get more complex and work better after time. You have the same computer program for 15 years and it starts working better, right? Because as the code gets mutated and the digital numbers all change a little bit and things get messed up a little bit, it always goes the positive, right? Or when you have a digital code, they're very finite. And one little mess up messes up everything. The same as DNA. And they admit that mutations are almost always bad. Almost always. Some people say always bad. And yet, given enough time, though, those bad mutations would go from microbial life to humans today. Well, I know it's not going that way. I know that mutations are usually bad. I know that. I understand that. But you know what? Given enough time. No, that means given enough time, it would become worse and worse and worse. And we're seeing all these things on the bottom levels. Now, just for you, just the best arguments, just to say, if you're debating evolution, if you're doing that, let me say, stick with the Bible. Just start with it, God's arguments in Psalms 19 and Romans 1. It's declaring it. If they're so hard-hearted, you see they're so hard-hearted, they're not going to believe it no matter what you show them. You could introduce them and they shake God's hand. Some of them, they're going to say, I don't believe. They just aren't going to. But you know what? Start with those arguments. Just because in man is built the knowledge of God. And just say, you know what? If you saw a painting, would you believe in a painter? Would you say, oh, look, all that paint just came together to form an amazing painting? Which would be far less than the first creature coming together, by the way. They'd believe in a painter because they saw the painting. Do you believe in a builder of this building? Or did they come together randomly? No. Given enough time, if you put a tornado through a construction material, it would become a building. Just given enough time. No, it really wouldn't. The nails really wouldn't nail the boards together in a perfect pattern. And the windows really wouldn't be put in place and be sealed and caulked. It really wouldn't happen. Your time argument is dumb. Do you believe in a builder because there's a building? Because it's built in the knowledge of God. And the reason, the best argument is just to go back to God's word and what it says. And seeing that is because scripture is powerful, sharper than a two-edged sword. It's a seed that gets planted in them. And by the way, let me give you one last thing when contending for the faith. Don't start there. If they believe in God, that's enough. If they believe in evolution, when they get saved and start studying the Bible, the evolution will go away real quick. It always does. You don't have to make them not believe evolution. They have to believe that God is. If they believe in evolution, that there is a God, get to the cross. Get to the cross. You can straighten that stuff out later. If they just got to, the Bible says, he that cometh to him must believe that he is. So if they're a theistic evolutionist, you teach them, you just go to the cross. Teach them salvation. And you'll be surprised how their thinking will get straightened out when they get saved. Life becomes a lot more clear. And all of a sudden, they start thinking a whole bunch more logical. And have to say, you know what? I know it's all pointing towards design, but you know what? We cannot think in design. We've got to think this way. They won't do that. They'll think logically if they'll start following the Bible. All right. We're going to go back next week with some more standing and contending for the faith. And let's pray, and we'll be back next Sunday morning. Father, thank you for the chance to defend your word, Lord, and to defend, Lord, against this lie and, Lord, of evolution. Little bits are true, Lord, like any good lie. There is adaptation. There is things written in our code we can change and become stronger, and the fittest do survive. But Lord, that we change, we all evolved, and you had nothing to do with it, Lord. It's so sad because it's worshiping the creature more than the Creator, and we're saying we evolved from nothing and just happened out of circumstance, Lord. Thank you. We're important. We're precious, and we're designed for a purpose. Help us to find that purpose in our life. In Jesus' name, amen.